Hey, everybody, this is Matthew Soltysiak, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast. This season, it's all grit. I speak with a variety of guests and interview key players, gaining more insight on what makes this team go. The Detroit Lions are now in a new, grittier era, and we look beyond just the kneecaps when it comes to the analysis. Welcome to another episode. In this episode, we focus on two very specific things. The NFL draft experience in Detroit, and we analyze the draft picks by the Detroit Lions. Let's get to it, Lions fans.
This is Jason Gabenda with the Detroit Lions, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast.
I'm joined today, as I often am, by James Cook, senior sports writer for the Traverse City Record Eagle. You can also hear him on the podcast, The Get Around, that drops on Mondays. James, good to have you here, and let me ask, how are you feeling right now after these last few days?
I'm a little tired. Thursday and Friday took a lot out of me. It was a lot of running around, a lot of standing around, jostling around in huge crowds.
Yeah, I have a feeling many people that are from the state of Michigan that are interested in the Detroit Lions that may or may not have attended the draft are a little bit fatigued, especially if you went to the draft. And let's start by talking about our draft experiences. James, you were down in Detroit. You were there for round one on Thursday, rounds two and three on Friday. I made my way down Friday evening. I attended on Saturday for rounds four through seven. Let me just quickly touch base on the numbers that I've seen reported, which is the first night drew a record crowd of 275,000. The second night was over 230,000. I know on Thursday and Friday nights, alerts went out on their app that they had stopped admitting people. They had hit capacity. I don't know what the exact numbers were for the third day, but the total number that came out was 775,000 people attending. That destroys the old record set in Nashville back in 2019, which was 600,000. And to give everybody else an idea, the last 2 years were the third and fourth most at this point, which is Kansas City with 312,000 and Las Vegas with 300,000. So this is a pretty incredible number. James, before we get into what went through, what's your overall takeaway from just the overall number there?
Yeah, it was impressive how many people were there. I mean, it was like being at Woodstock, you know, and I went to like the 94, 99 Woodstocks, and it was kind of that similar, you know, vibe of a lot of people in a very small space. At one point, and you know where like the NFL experience, the draft experience part is in the kind of more south end or whatever. That part was actually on Thursday night cordoned off for a little while. They were not letting people back from that area into where the stage was, for a while because they had hit that capacity and they, were apparently pretty worried about how many people were in there. And I was in the experience when it got cordoned off with some friends of ours. So we were stuck in there for a while and, They had two barriers set up. They had, you know, police officers there on horseback and everything to keep people out. And then the people kind of charged the first set of barriers and went through them and then stopped when they got to the guys on horses. And then, I don't know, it was about probably 20 minutes later, they just kind of started letting people through.
All right. So that was on Thursday then. Is that correct?
That was Thursday. Yeah.
So all right. Yeah, tell me more about Thursday and what you experienced on Thursday and then into Friday.
Yeah. And then once we got in there, we were able to work our way into the, you know, into the crowd and the stage. And, you know, it was just packed. It was pretty electric. You know, the booing of certain teams was pretty evident, you know, especially Dallas, seemed to get a lot of boos. You know, It was a pretty good, jovial, you know, atmosphere. You didn't see, even though there's a lot of fans from a lot of different teams, you didn't see a whole lot of, you know, disturbances or anything like that. Like people may be giving each other a little bit of razzin, but nothing too serious.
All right. Well, you said you made your way through. I know you made your way through eventually because you were there in the crowd when the Lions traded up and drafted Terrion Arnold. I've seen the video online of the crowd reaction. Tell me what it was like being there when that moment happened.
Yeah, just when the lights behind the stage changed to, you know, Detroit is on the clock, the crowd just went nuts. It was just electric. And everybody was, you know, anticipating who and Tyrion Arnold was like the guy that I was like, oh, he's still there. And so that's the guy. I had not even really considered him to be somebody that the Lions could have drafted this year, because I didn't think that they would trade up high enough to be able to get him. So the fortune that they got with that working out is just amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, it was. And we're going to get into that when we talk about the draft analysis. In addition to talking about, you know, being at the stage and witnessing the draft picks being made, you did bring up the NFL experience, which was, for anybody who didn't make it there, was the opportunity to go see the Lombardi Trophy, to do some games, interactive experiences. You got to see Super Bowl rings if you wanted. There were autograph events. James, were there any ones that you were able to go to that you liked or had any takeaways from?
We didn't really end up doing any of those things because the lines were so long. You know, they had one thing too where it was all you had to do was wait in line and you got free pizza. And you could do a thing where you got to run a 40 like in the combine. And we wanted to do that, but the line for that was just epically long, and we decided that we needed to get back into the theater area to get to see the pick. So we didn't get to really experience much of that. We did the thing where, you know, they had the NFL player figures, one for each team, that you could pose in, kind of like you were a player. And so we did some of those kind of photos and stuff like that, but didn't get to do a whole lot of the other stuff.
All right. Well, yeah, I heard it was busy. I mean, those numbers tell the story, and you're like, mm-hmm. Well, what do those numbers mean? And, you know, my daughter and I, it was a last minute thing. Like, you know, our couple shows ago, you and Jerry were going down. I wasn't going. And then on Friday at about 3:30, my daughter and I made the decision we were going. So we left that night, spent the night at a friend's place just outside of Detroit, got up there the next morning. And we got there the first thing in the morning, and it was rainy that morning as well. Plus it was early and opened at 9 a.m. So we got there, we were in line like 10 minutes before it opened. And some of the people we were with had been there the day before, 2 days before. They said the line to get in had been blocks long just to get in. And we were 15 people deep to get in. And so when we did get in, we got to do a number of experiences. We got to do that Detroit Lions experience where you got to go inside to see the Dan Campbell Voltar machine and the uniforms. And my daughter was adamant that we had to throw the football to get the free pizza. And so we did get the free pizza there. But it was fun. We didn't do any of the autograph things. Those lines were still like super long. We did catch Amon-Ra St. Brown walking by just briefly. We stumbled upon Barry Sanders, and he was like a late schedule to an event, and he wasn't like on the big schedule until late. And we happened to get there and got to hear him talk a little bit. So that was cool. We got to experience that. And we made our way over to the theater stage, like you were there. Obviously, it was different being fourth through the seventh rounds. The Lions did not have fourth round picks. They traded up later, but we didn't stick around that late because it wasn't early in the fourth, and we had been there since the thing opened. So we got to experience it. I have to imagine the nighttime feel as well with those lights, like you talked about, and being the first round made it such a unique, energetic crowd when you were there. And but what a great event. And from all I could tell, it seemed like a great success for the city of Detroit and for the Detroit Lions and all the fans that showed up.
I think so, definitely. I mean, aside from them getting way more people than what was expected, which probably brought some challenges, it seemed to be pretty well run. You know, I mean, for having that many people there, you know, lines for bathrooms were not bad. You know, near the theater, you know, lines for beer were not very long. You know, so they had planned for those kind of things. The having too many people inside kind of too early, I think, kind of freaked them out maybe a little bit. And that thing where they started cordoning people off. But aside from that, everything seemed to go pretty smoothly.
Yeah, you know, I felt the same way. I mean, I had probably the smallest day of crowds there, and it was spread out the most because it was the longest at that point. But getting to see some of those experiences, like I got to see the jerseys close up, got to try them on actually at one spot and put a helmet on. And I got to tell you, seeing it in person, that black, it looks pretty sharp. It's a nice improved black over the Matt Millen era black. And I still love the Honolulu Blue jersey. That is my absolute favorite with the white lettering. And I guess it means my Chris Spielman jersey from back in the day isn't going to quite stick out as much when I wear it this year, but that's okay. The Lions did such a great job with this jersey release. And when you look around the NFL and see how some of the other ones went, it just reinforces how well this went for the Lions. It could have gone so many different ways. And then, James, I mentioned the thing about Barry Sanders. The cool thing was he was taking question and answers from us there as well. And he had a great quote about how the end of the season wasn't a great feeling for Lions fans, but winning two playoff games was incredible. And he believes that this team is being built for the sustainment of that, to keep returning to that level. So, James, let's transition to the building of this team. Now, coming into the draft, the Lions had a first round, a second round, a third round, a fifth round, 2 6th rounds, and a seventh round. But that's not what happened. The Lions went in the first and the second, as expected, but then they didn't have a third. They took two guys in the fourth when they had no fourth rounds. Then they had 2 6th round picks. So let's start with Terrion Arnold. The first pick at 24, they traded up 5 spots with the Cowboys to get him. He's a defensive back we never really talked about much as a possibility. We thought Kule McKinstry might be the guy or somebody else there at the end of the first round. Give me your thoughts on this trade up and Terrion Arnold.
Oh, it was a great trade up. I mean, the third price isn't, or third round pick isn't cheap, but it's not ridiculous either. And they didn't give up anything else. They got a seventh back next season in addition to that. But the value of just getting Terrion Arnold, I mean, who is somebody who in most mock drafts and most draft experts had going near the top 10. And then that run that they had on offensive players just kind of kept pushing him down the board and all the defensive players. So the Lions, I think, got an incredible value there. I got the best corner in pretty much everybody's rankings, the best corner in the draft.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I think it was like the first 14 picks or so were all offensive players. And it was like, you know, how is this going to help the Lions? You know, it pushed those defensive players down. Now, I didn't look closely into Terrion Arnold's game because he wasn't even considered much of an option for the Lions where we were at and what it was going to take to trade up and get him. But from what I've read, his game might not be as polished as Kule McKinstry's right now, but he has a higher ceiling is what I've been hearing. Is there anything else you can add to what Lions fans should know is the difference between those two teammates?
Yeah, he plays, I think he plays the run better than McKinstry does of the two. Their coverage was pretty similar, but he's almost 6 feet tall, almost 190, ran a 4.5 flat in the 40, which isn't a blazing speed, but if you look at the times in the combine for almost all the corners, there was not very many that broke 4.5. Kind of surprisingly, you expect corners, you kind of have this thought that corners have to run 4.4 40s, but very few of them did this year. He plays the ball well. He had 5 picks last season, led the SEC. He played a lot of press man at Alabama too. He didn't jam receivers at the line, but he played press man up on them, which I think is something that the Lions want to do more. And, and Rake Straw that they added in the second round, similar guy. Interesting that Charlie Ward was his high school basketball coach.
Well, there's an interesting little nugget right there. I never would have known that. Well, James, let me add with Terrion Arnold's draft spot. I didn't think the Lions were going defensive back with the first pick because I didn't think they'd want to pick the third or fourth defensive back off the board at that spot. But the fact that they got that Terry Arnold fell. I said, if a certain player falls, I could see the Lions maybe try to go get him. This was the perfect situation. And they went up and got him. They got one of the top two defensive backs in the draft. You know, you can see it flip-flop either way. But they got somebody that they weren't supposed to be able to get. This helps with what has been arguably the biggest weakness the last 2 years on the team. Definitely this past season on the team. And then in round two, Enos Rakestraw, 61st overall pick. The Lions don't have to trade up to get him out of Missouri. They double down. They add two more guys. What do you like about this draft pick?
Again, a lot like Terry Arnold. He's a little shorter, weighs a few pounds less. Also ran a 4.51 in the 40. So similar speed. He almost signed with Alabama out of high school. So you almost had the three of them on the same team. And I think Nick Saban said during the thing that the corner from Toledo that went in the first round, like he tried to get him to transfer to Alabama. They could have had all four of those guys in one secondary.
That would be pretty incredible.
Yeah, but Rakestraw on commitment day, he stayed with Missouri, who was the first Power Five school to offer him. So he stayed loyal on that. I think he's a guy that's going to be a starting man corner in the NFL. He's already graduated from college with a degree. He's a SEC academic honor roll guy three times. So he's a smart guy as well. Does have a bit of an injury history. He missed the 2021 season with a torn ACL. Missed four games last season with a groin injury. And I guess played with the injury in a couple other games. But aside from that, there's not a whole lot of knocks on his game.
Well, I like the draft pick because, yeah, there's always, some potential things. That's why they're not the top five pick or a top 10 pick. But to get somebody of his talent level at pick 61 and to add a second player in the defensive back room in this year's draft at this high is pretty amazing because the Lions have not drafted a high defensive back under Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell. And yes, we brought some guys in last year and we had mixed returns on it. And we brought guys in again this year with a trade for Carlton Davis, with the signing of Amik Robertson. But we didn't have any long-term things put in. These are a couple guys that could be long-term things put in place, which also means at the end of this season, you've got a little bit more flexibility and you're not feeling so nervous with whatever happens with Carlton Davis.
Yeah. And it might be, you might even be in the position where if Mosley comes back and he's healthy and you've got Carlton Davis, that these two guys might not have to start from day one. And both of them are also very good special teams players and played a lot of special teams last year, which is unusual for guys who are like All America level. But they played a lot on coverage units, on return units, and that's something they're going to probably do for the Lions right from the get-go, even if they're not starting at corner.
Well, you brought up a really interesting thing, and we'll get to it right away. These are first and second round picks, and they might not be starters for the Detroit Lions. Brad Holmes said that. He came out afterwards and said, guys, just because we draft somebody even early, it doesn't mean they're an automatic starter for us. The quality of this roster compared to 2 years ago is like in two different generations. And so you in great teams, what they do, they bring people in and out of a draft, I don't know how many players on average start on a really good team from that draft class. Is it one? Is it two? But the Lions are used to trying to get 3 to 4 starters out of a draft class. And that doesn't have to be the case anymore because you've got such quality people at these positions that you're looking to bolster depth and maybe add a piece or two at a higher level. And so you're right, James. These guys, they're going to be in there to compete with the other guys brought in, but there's going to be a little bit less pressure on them to succeed right away. Like when Jeff Okuda was drafted, the pressure was on him. I mean, A, top five pick, but B, they needed him right away. So it's like, get in and do this. And so these guys with the right coaching have a great opportunity to succeed and just bolster the depth in the weakest part. So I love these first two picks for the Lions, and I'm pretty excited about that. What are your thoughts on some of those comments by Holmes about the depth and the need to start?
Yeah, they may not start right away. They'll play a lot. I mean, you know, the Lions have depth at corner now. They've got, you know, five legit corners. And so they can play whatever games they want to, mix and match coverages, do a lot of things like that. I guess the only other knock on Rakestraw was that he only had one interception in his whole college career. So he's not an interception guy. He's more of a pass breakup guy. He's going to get there and tip the ball away, not necessarily make the interception, the giant game changing play.
All right. Well, and again, the biggest weakness on our team has been addressed. You never know how it's going to go, but you got to, you know, and I know Brad Holmes didn't know the draft would go this way. And he even said it. It's one of those rare situations, and it happened twice, that the best player on the board met the biggest need for the Lions. They didn't go out of their way to draft somebody who met their need that wasn't the best player on the board just because they were doing it to fill a hole. So that really helps for the secondary. We'll talk more about some other parts of it later. But let's move over to the fourth round. And these are guys that, you know, you're in the fourth round, you're not expecting them to start. These are guys that you're hoping to become quality backup or rotational players early on and then see what happens from there. I'm not saying you can't be a starter. I mean, ask Amon-Ra St. Brown, the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL for about 48 hours, but he was. So with pick 126, the Lions had moved up there with the Jets. They drafted offensive tackle Giovanni Manu out of British Columbia. And the guy's got massive size. He probably needs some refinement to his game, but he's a tackle. And that means he won't need to be pressed into duty, thankfully, because we've got Decker and Sewell right there. But it was really important for the Lions to bring somebody in there that's, you know, from the draft and not just looking for an undrafted free agent. James, what do you know about Manu?
Yeah, he is massive. I mean, he's 6'7", I think, almost 6'8". Some places list him at 6'8", 352 pounds.
Wow.
Still ran the 40 in almost 5 seconds, almost broke 5 seconds in the 40, which for a guy at that size is pretty amazing. He's, you know, not only tall, he has long, pretty long arms, which is something you look at for offensive defensive linemen a bit more, and played a lot of left tackle. You know, he played, you know, he started for 4 seasons in college in Canada. So, you know, the level of play is a concern, I guess, there, or a question, but he started right away as a freshman in that college level at left tackle right away. He played 6 games at left guard his junior year. But the rest of his time was all at left tackle. And supposedly he just mauled people. And I saw this one photo of him blocking a guy, and he was just like almost lifting the guy off his feet and throwing him to the side. He's a massive, massive person.
And you know, I don't think it was by chance that the Lions did this. I mean, maybe it's by chance that Brad Holmes and Campbell had their conversation, but Holmes afterwards said, he was like, we're not trading up into the fourth. We'll just stay in the fifth. But he woke up the next morning and he said he had two names on his mind, two dudes that he was thinking about. And he said he mentioned them to Dan Campbell. And Campbell goes, I've got those guys on my minds too. Let's go get them. So, you know, he adds another potential piece. They needed to add another young guy on the outside of the offensive line there. They didn't have a lot of depth to begin with. Adding Manu does that. And then the Lions made, maybe this other one's even more interesting of a trade up. And I believe his name is Sion Vaki. Did I pronounce that right, James?
I'm not 100% sure how you pronounce his first name, but yeah, Vaki. Yeah, very interesting prospect.
Yeah, and he's listed as a running back safety. The Lions are just straight up listing him as a running back out of Utah. Now, he played mostly safety there, but he was forced into action due to some injuries and played, you know, I don't know if it's 6-7 games at running back, and was pretty incredible. I thought his average was like 7.5 a carry. And I know college stats can be a little bit different than the pro stats. But the interesting thing here is the Lions want to see what he can do at running back because they think there might be some untapped potential there. Plus, they like his versatility and want to see maybe a big special teams contributor.
Yeah, and I think there's also the possibility to grow into a role at safety as well. You know, he could be a guy that's it's at least an emergency safety for you. You know, so you have one more body who can play that position and has done it a lot in his career. He's a team captain, described as he's got all the intangibles, you know, hardworking leader, leads by example. He's in high school, he trained with Najee Harris when he was in high school to try to get better. Also another very good special teams player, like you mentioned. One of the coaches compared him to Eric Weddle, which that's not a bad comp. When your fourth round pick, your second fourth round pick is getting compared to Eric Weddle.
No, it's not. And it's interesting also, you know, Holmes said something to the effect of, you never know the answers to your test until you're done taking it. And he said they found out later on that both of these guys would have been gone if the Lions had waited till the fifth round, which means other people have interest on them as well. Other people saw some possibilities in them. So there'll be a couple of very interesting guys to watch, especially Vaki. You're right. He's a guy that could actually get time at safety for them, but they want to see what he can do at running back as well. But they already know what they got of him at safety. And so that's a real interesting pick. And he's just considered a really athletic person. So that'll be real interesting to keep an eye on. Any last thoughts on that before we go to the sixth round?
Yeah, I think you could totally see him being a kick returner for the Lions as well in the new style of kickoffs. I think you're going to see more running backs as kick returners than wide receivers. And I think that's where he could maybe fit in right away is that role and other special teams roles. And then, you know, as a third or fourth running back as well.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And I do think that Khalif Raymond's days at kick returner might be gone, not just because of him, but because of the whole change to the system itself and the design of the play. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on and see what that looks like. We'll probably get more of those answers as we start seeing some preseason stuff or just practice and training camp. So now we go to the sixth round. The Lions drafted two players in the sixth round. They had two sixth-round picks to begin with. The first one, though, they got Mekhi Wingo, defensive tackle from LSU. He went a little bit later than expected, and the Lions actually moved up from, I believe it was pick 201, all the way to pick 189 to get him.
Yeah, he was, I don't know if you're familiar with Dane Brugler, who produces one of the most in-depth draft profiles guides out there. He had him projected as a third round pick and going at the end of the top 100.
Wow.
Yeah. One spot ahead of Tavondre Sweat, who ended up going in the second round.
Thought I heard that Wingo was a little bit undersized for his position. So he just said he had to work harder.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's a three technique. He's about 285 ish, but has good enough pass rush moves where they would move him to end on passing downs as well. So one of the comps that I saw in him was Ed Oliver. That's a pretty good, they didn't say he is Ed Oliver, but in that mold. As far as the actual full thing was a not as explosive version of Ed Oliver.
Okay.
But I mean, that's going to be somebody who I think can help that defensive line. He's got good hands. He's got good moves in the defensive line. He plays the run pretty well, even though he isn't a huge defensive line huge for defensive tackle size wise. He did run a 4.85 40 at close to 290 pounds. So he's pretty athletic. He's supposed to be very incredibly tough. He was LSU's player who, I don't know if you know the thing about what LSU does with the number 18. It's called the Iron Tiger. Whoever, like the one player on the team who shows the most dedication and leadership and all the intangibles gets to wear number 18. And he was that guy for LSU last year. So it was weird to see a defensive tackle wearing 18, but that's what he did. He got hurt during the season, worked his butt off to get back and play in their bowl game, even when he didn't have to. But he took that leadership role on as the number 18 guy and said, I got to get back and help my guys play in our bowl game.
So yeah, that's a story we heard from one of the Iowa players that the Lions drafted last year, how they were injured, but they worked their way back because they wanted to help out the team and not just worry about themselves. That seems to be a total trait the Lions look for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a selfless guy who wants to be there for his teammates.
So let's go to the last pick of the draft for the Detroit Lions. It was in the sixth round as well. Offensive guard Christian Mahogany out of Boston College. He is a late round guy who could develop. Seems like a pretty good addition at this point in the draft, grabbing a guard who, again, is a guy the Lions didn't think would be there at this point. And Holmes said, you know, there's some things about him that might have caused him to slip, but we're not concerned. And we actually like kind of like the fight and the work in this guy.
Yeah, Brugler actually had him rated as the seventh best guard in the entire draft and a third round pick.
Wow.
So they got another deal there. Emery Hunt, who's another guy who does a really in-depth scouting thing, had Mahogany rated as the fifth best guard in this draft.
I'm not sure what caused him to fall, but something did.
I don't know either. He has the loyalty trait that we kind of talked about a little bit earlier with the, you know, with players plan to get back for the thing, but he had offers to transfer away from Boston College and teams offering him much more NIL money than Boston College was. And he decided to stay there and stay with the school that brought him along.
That's awesome. And again, that's another trait the Lions look for. And even though we don't know all of his details, nor do we need to, the Lions said they already know. They know everything about this guy. They've done their homework and they felt good taking him. And that's great. That's one of the other positions we wanted to see the Lions get was another youthful guy on the interior of the offensive line. And so having him in there will help add youth, add more talent, and add more competition for the backup rotational roles in there.
Yeah. The good quote from Brugler in his profile of this guy is he says he plays like a bouncer outside of a club, looking to bash heads and power with forceful hands.
Nice. That sounds like somebody who's ready to go and pretty quick at the move as well.
Yeah. Also says he projects as a guard, versatile NFL starter, play both sides, and ideally suited for a downhill run team, which is what the Lions are.
All right. Well, James, before we get to the undrafted free agents, we'll talk to them in just a moment. I want to bring up the wide receiver position. A lot of people are looking for the Lions to draft a receiver. And Holmes actually talked about this. He said that they had a discussion and they were like, if we take somebody and they're not sure that they're going to make that starting lineup and be a key contributor in the receiving game, and that player's not a special teams contributor, that could be an issue for the roster. And you already mentioned those top two picks off the board that are defensive backs also contributed on special teams. And so that might have been a reason why the wide receiver position wasn't taken. The right guy wasn't there at the right spot. And we'll get into more of that, but I just wanted to put that out there. Is that kind of what your takeaway was on that before we get into undrafted free agents?
Yeah, and that, and I think that some of the guys that they had on their board, some of these guys fell and were big, bargains. You know, getting guys in the sixth round who had been talked about being third round picks at points during the process. I mean, are you going to take a wide receiver that you're not sure on, or are you going to take the guy who you had rated way, way high? And then in the undrafted free agents, they did get one of the top undrafted free agent wide receivers.
They did. Exactly. All right, James, well, let's transition right into those undrafted free agents. You brought up the all 10 wide receiver, Isaiah Williams. He got a $15,000 signing bonus and $225,000 in guarantees. That is a ton of money for an undrafted free agent. We're going to get to him after we go through everybody else. Jalon Calhoun, a wide receiver out of Duke. That's a guy who used to play quarterback at one point. There is a center, Duke Clemens, out of UCLA. He got some guaranteed money. I think it's about $50,000 or $60,000. And there's a chance he could contribute. He's out of UCLA, as I said. There's a linebacker out of Ohio State, Steel Chambers. And they grabbed another linebacker slash safety out of Northern Illinois, Daron Gilbert. a safety out of Wake Forest named Chellen Garnes, I believe his name is, and Hogan Hatton, a guy out of Idaho, a long snapper, an offensive lineman out of Louisville, Brian Hudson, a defensive end, Isaac Ukwu out of Ole Miss, a tight end, Isaac Rex out of BYU, and a kicker I think a lot of people here might be familiar with, James Turner out of Michigan. So let's start with Isaiah Williams. He's the one that's going to get the most talked about, I don't know, publicity, if you will, because he got a pretty big chunk of money given his way. Now, James, he's not a 6'3", 6'2 guy. I think he's about 5'10". He's not super tall. 5'9", even smaller. 5'9",
yeah.
Shorter, not smaller. All right, so what do you make of this guy? I mean, he was an all first team Big Ten in the college ranks last year. He didn't get drafted, though. He was probably the most, you said it, one of the most sought-after guys. He could be a returner type guy, too. I don't know how that looks. But it looks like there's a good chance of him making the roster, getting this type of money.
I think he's got a pretty realistic chance of making the roster. You know, he's going to have to look good in camp and everything, obviously. But he's a slot receiver. You know, but the Lions played Amon-Ra St. Brown out wide a lot last year, and you can always play two guys in the slot if need be. So I mean, that was his role in college. He was a slot receiver. You know, he's a track guy. He's got pretty good numbers, pretty good. You know, his 40 time was not great. That and the combination of being small for a wide receiver was what knocked him out of the draft, but a very productive player and somebody who really gains yards after the catch. He's somebody who can get open, and I think it was 70% of his yardage last year was after the catch.
That's impressive. That's a very impressive number right there. Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because St. Brown did play about half his snaps outside last year?
And pretty close, yeah.
And I'm wondering if that was by design of intentionality or if it was out of need. I know he had more desire to play out there a little bit, and he is 6 feet tall. And so it makes you wonder that, hey, if they go with this Williams guy and they go with the guy we know as Raymond, and those are your slot guys, and if the Lions don't bring in a tall, typical X receiver, and you've obviously got some other guys on the roster with Donovan Peoples-Jones and Antoine Green, do you continue to see more of St. Brown out there?
Yeah, I think you totally could, you know, and then Isaiah Williams could be your guy that fits into the slot, or Khalif Raymond a little bit more. You know, he can also play special teams. He's got return experience, so he can do there. He's just explosive when he gets the ball in his hands. You know, Dane Brugler had a 7th round grade on him, so he's a guy who was supposed to get drafted. But again, that not running well at the combine and then only being 5'9" probably worked against him a lot to a lot of general managers.
Yeah, well, and there's only so many spots in the wide receiver room. I mean, with St. Brown, Jamison Williams, and Khalif Raymond being your top three, then you're like, okay, is Donovan Peoples-Jones the 4th guy there? And you've got Antoine Green from last year, and now you've got Isaiah Williams. And is there somebody else they might bring in yet, which we can even get to that? But it'll be interesting to see where he ranks and where there's that spot and what role it is that he can contribute, because there's not a lot of room for them to expand.
I think Williams is one of the guys who's probably got the best chance of any of the undrafted free agents of making this team. But I don't think he's a lock either. So there are some of the other guys that I think have a chance to at least make the practice squad, if not maybe even with an impressive camp sneak in. You know, I'm really interested to see the defensive lineman from William & Mary. I mean, it's a smaller school and everything, but I mean, he's 3-time All-American, led that school. He hit it with 28 sacks, 37 and a half tackles for losses.
What was his name? I don't think I listed him as one of the guys. I missed him.
Nate Lynn.
Yeah, I did not get him on the list.
Yeah, he's kind of a tweener size too. The whole undrafted things are who's you know, sometimes the school will announce them, sometimes the player will announce them, sometimes agents will announce them. So that's it takes a little while for those lists to come together sometimes. You know, I don't know if he's a guy who's going to make the roster, but I mean, he put up big numbers at a lower level. So it'd be interesting to see how he does in training camp. You know, Steel Chambers, you mentioned the linebacker from Ohio State. Mm-hmm. He led Ohio State in tackles last year. He was a guy who was supposed to be drafted in the sixth or seventh round. Just didn't continue to. He's got the traits, I think, to play in the NFL. And knows how to play special teams, so he can at least do that. So I think he can be a rotational guy, at least in the NFL, if they need him to be. And he also played some running back when he was at Ohio State. He started as running back there.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, we get undrafted free agents every year. Last year, Trevor Nowoski made the practice squad, got elevated up to the active roster, and then got taken. When he was put back to, you know, put on waivers to go back to the practice squad, Arizona grabbed him. And so, you know, you never know what you're going to find after the sixth and seventh round with some of these undrafted free agents, but it's exciting to watch. And you know they're given everything to make the roster. So that's the draft. And here's our roster. But it's likely far from finished. I mean, we know that. There's possible positions of getting added. Now, not likely a defensive back at this point. I think we probably feel pretty good there.
I don't think any of the undrafted guys were corners.
No, I don't think so. But safety. Now, there's a possible position there. Now, we might see Branch get used at safety a little bit more, but we also could see a veteran get brought in there, yet as a free agent signing. Do you have any thoughts on what they might do at safety?
I like the idea of them bringing in a veteran's safety. You know, they're familiar with Quandre Diggs. We've mentioned him before. I don't think he would be too expensive. You know, they've got still around $10 million in cap space. So they have the room to be able to sign a couple of these good veteran guys who can plug some holes and increase your depth. And I think safety is, with corner kind of taken care of now. Safety and wide receiver are kind of those two positions that you're kind of worried most about depth, I think, at. So I think safety is probably definitely going to get addressed. You know, people have always brought up DJ Chark for wide receiver too, because he's still out there and has familiarity with the offense. But so I think that they will bring in a couple of veterans here, you know, post June 1, probably more likely. After the draft, I think that's something that definitely happens.
Yeah, you're right. That X position at wide receiver spot is still a possibility as well. I mean, we've got Donovan Peoples-Jones in. That's probably the biggest hope on the roster right now. We're also hoping for some progress from Antoine Green. Don't quite know what you have. And it's very possible for a late round pick to make a big leap after that full season, or a marginal leap even. Doesn't have to be a huge home run, but just make progress and show that, you know, you've picked up a few things that brings you to the next level. I know there are people out there clamoring for us to go get T. Higgins, but I don't see the Lions doing that, because even if it's next year's draft picks, you don't give up draft picks for a high-priced guy. That's not usually the Lions' recipe for success. And plus, the Lions don't usually want to go get a guy who wants his way out of somewhere.
Yeah, they haven't shown any desire to really do that. I've seen people who have also said about, you know, wanting to get Hendrickson from the Bengals, who also asked for a trade, the defensive end. But I mean, they would have to make some other moves or restructure his contract, because he already makes more than what they have in cap space.
Yeah, and you know, the Lions already have a ton of money invested in that wide receiver position now. I mean, yes, we know St. Brown got his contract, but a year ago, Khalif Raymond got an extension. But I did point out, you know, last year, Denzel Mims was brought in. You know, the Lions have Donovan Peoples-Jones in place of Reynolds, but Josh was consistently more productive the last few years. And we were all excited late last summer when Marvin Jones got added to the roster. Now, it didn't work out, but it told you where people were at the time and what their concern was. Even though LaPorta has had a sensational rookie season, we know that Jamison Williams has progressed and Amon-Ra St. Brown has continued to get better. People are still a little bit nervous about that wide receiver position, that X spot. Now, the guys that are out there right now are guys like Allen Robinson, Odell Beckham Jr., Michael Gallup, Tyler Boyd, Michael Thomas, Russell Gage, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, DJ Shark, you know, and people of the like. And so it would have to be a guy who probably doesn't want to break the bank, and it'd have to be the right fit. I don't know what the Lions are going to do. I wouldn't be shocked to see them bring somebody in, but I guess a few things would just have to line up for that.
Yeah, I don't see him making a trade for that position. They've already kind of tried to tinker with that here and there. You know, they traded for DPJ. You know, a couple of years ago they tried the Trinity Benson trade. You know, they've signed some other guys, like you said, bringing in Mims, bringing in Marvin Jones to kind of try to flesh out that depth at the wide receiver position. So I think they're still going to look at somebody. You know, and maybe it could be Isaiah Williams. It could be that undrafted free agent who could be that guy. Maybe it's Antoine Green taking a step forward. You know, they liked him enough last year that they kept him on the active roster the whole year and didn't expose him to waivers and by putting him on the practice squad at all. So they have to see something in him still.
Now, James, there's one position we haven't really talked about too much, and this is one that I know some people are concerned about, is defensive end. The Lions haven't done a whole lot here other than the Marcus Davenport move. And you know, he's considered more to be like a rotational change of pace guy, not someone who's going to be, you know, a regular starter playing a high percentage of the snaps. Do you think the Lions are going to maybe consider bringing in a free agent here?
They can consider it for sure. I mean, if things work out well, you know, you can play Marcus Davenport on first and second down on the run downs, and then on third down, bring in James Houston for the pass rush. You know, that's your best case scenario at defensive end. I mean, Davenport is a pretty good run defender on the edge, pretty good at setting that edge. So, you know, the cupboard isn't bare there, you know, and then you've also got Kaminsky and Josh Paschal. Defensive end too, who, you know, both at times in the last couple over the last couple seasons have shown flashes of being really good. So the cupboard's not bare there. I know it's not as sexy as a lot of fans want it to be, opposite of Aiden Hutchinson, but you know, there's ingredients there, and we'll have to see how Aaron Glenn uses those.
I agree with that assessment completely. It's like you're going to take the pieces and put them together to make the puzzle work. I honestly think anything short of an Aiden Hutchinson on the right end and the left end is going to be a disappointment for many fans. They want two Aiden Hutchinsons. And while some teams pull something similar to that off, it's a rarity. It's the exception. And the fact that we have increased or improved our defensive line on the interior with DJ Reader, I think that's going to make a big difference right there. I love the combo you put together with Davenport and Houston. That seems like a very practical resolution for that situation. And also knowing that we have the defensive backs that we have, that's going to also help make the defensive line's job a little bit easier. And the fact that the quarterback won't be able to throw the ball away quite as quickly, not throw the ball away, but complete the pass quite as quickly, because hopefully we'll be playing a little bit tighter coverage.
Yeah. And by the guy looking at the guys that they brought in at corner too, they're going to play more man press coverage. So they're going to be on the receivers right away instead of playing that, you know, the defense you saw last year where the, you know, Cam Sutton's 10, 12 yards downfield when the ball snapped. You know, so they're not going to let the play come to them. They're going to get in the receiver's grills, get them less time to get open. And, you know, we saw how many times Aiden Hutchinson last year was this close to getting sacks. And, you know, with the addition of maybe James Houston coming back, with the addition of the four corners that they've brought in, making that secondary better, you know, a lot of those are going to start becoming sacks.
And, you know, James, I agree. Like you said, if the quarterback has to hold on to that ball for one more second, maybe Hutchinson has four more sacks. So that's exactly it. All right, well, let's wrap this thing up. Let's give our final thoughts on the 2024 NFL draft for the Detroit Lions. James, what are your overarching themes, thoughts, or last ideas you want to share?
I love how pretty much undeniably the biggest weakness on this team in the matter of a couple of days has become perhaps a strength, at least a strength of the defense. I think, you know, potentially at least you've got two excellent corners coming in. You've got the two free agents that you signed, essentially, if you count Carlton Davis. I mean, it's essentially they used their top three picks on corners because they traded the third for Carlton Davis, you know, then adding Amik Robertson and bringing Mosley back. I mean, you've got five NFL corners. It's gonna be interesting to see how it plays out.
It will be interesting. You know, I was very optimistic last year with the Cam Sutton, Emmanuel Mosley, and CJ Gardner-Johnson move. Didn't work the way we expected, but the Lions aren't shying away from it. And I'm thrilled. I am thrilled with the two spots addressing the weakest part on the team with this draft. The Lions, I mean, you don't even have to look at just the San Francisco game. Look at like the last five games of the season, including the playoffs. Like, our pass defense was the weakest link on our team during that stretch. And we have just put a lot of resources into that area. So that's got to be extremely encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you may even see a little bit more Brian Branch at safety because they've got five corners. They don't have to have him play the nickel anymore. And so that could put him back to safety and put Iffy into more of a rotational guy who comes in and is more of your box safety. And so you could see it, the secondary being played completely different this year as far as just being able to mix and match.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to give them a lot more flexibility. And depending on what they have available, they can move people around. Like you said, you might see Branch more at safety if they need the help at safety, depending who they bring in or don't bring in. And if they have the extra pieces in the defensive back room to move someone else to nickel. All right. Well, James, thanks for joining. Awesome talking Lions. And I think we once again feel pretty good about this draft.
I think so. I mean, it's three in a row. Three good ones in a row for Holmes. So
awesome.
Four.
All right, James. Well, great talking Lions with you. Glad to hear about your draft experience. Continue to rest up, and we'll be talking Lions again in no time.
Sounds good.
And thank you so much for tuning in, folks. You can find more episodes and content at notthesameoldlions.com. If you're listening on YouTube, please hit that like button. And while you're at it, tell your friends about this show, and please subscribe regardless of your listening platform. Until next time, stay gritty, my friends.